WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Tom Kenny. He does the voice of SpongeBob in the new animated SpongeBob SquarePants movie and in the SpongeBob TV series, which debuted on Nickelodeon in 1999 and has become the top show watched by kids. It also has a devoted adult following. Kenny has done voices for many cartoons, including Futurama, Powerpuff Girls, Johnny Bravo, and CatDog. Tom Kenny is also a stand-up comic. When we left off, we were talking about how much he loved Popeye cartoons. So when you were a kid and you loved Popeye, did you do the Popeye voice and that kind of Popeye mumble that he's always doing as he's walking and thinking?
I loved that. Yeah, that thing that Jack Mercer, the voice of Popeye, you know, he was Popeye for 80 years or something, you know, he was incredible. And I also loved the Looney Tunes, you know, Bugs and Daffy, of course, and, you know, Bullwinkle and Rocky were huge for me. And even those early Hanna-Barbera cartoons like Yogi Bear and Huckleberry Hound and Top Cat, you know, they had, even when the animation was fairly limited, the voice work was really great. And from a really early age, I was conscious of the fact that there were grown men whose job it was to help bring these things to life. And it seemed like a really fun job to me. I had an aunt, a very hep aunt, who, when I was a kid, gave me a bunch of Stan Freberg record albums, mm-hmm. like History of the United States and all that. And they had little biographies of the voice actors on the back of the album, like, you know, Stan Freberg, June Foray, Dawes Butler, you know, people like that. And they were amazing. I was very aware that there was a guy named Mel Blanc whose name was on every cartoon, but you know, pre-internet, in the pre-internet world, it was kind of hard to find out about that stuff. You had to sort of feel your way around, but that only made it more kind of mysterious. You know, I felt like there was this whole hidden world of cartoons and voice acting that needed to be uncovered by me.
So did you have a sense when you were a kid that you wanted to be a voice actor?
I did, yeah, I did. And by the time I was a teenager, it was firmly in place. In fact, one of my best friends from first grade on is the comedian Bobcat Goldthwait. And we met in first grade and you know, are still close at 42 years old or whatever. And he reminded me recently of a conversation that he and I had in high school, like just kind of, you know, kind of walking around your hometown where there's no show business and playing this game of whose career do you want? If you could have anybody's career in show business, who would you want? And this was probably 76 or 78. And Bob reminded me of this conversation we had had where he said John Belushi and I said Mel Blanc. And he said, wow, isn't that weird that you sort of did it. You're doing the same kind of work that Mel Blanc did. And I said, yeah, that is weird. I wanted to be an astronaut, and I kind of got to go up in space a couple of times. It's cool.
I don't know how Bobcat Goldthwait still manages to have a voice, because the voice that he does sounds like it would just rip up your vocal cords.
Yeah, I know. I don't either. He has vocal cords of steel. He is more than human. But yeah, he's we met in first grade. We went to the same Catholic school, but we were in separate first grades, and the first time I became aware of Bob was when the nun that taught his classroom just dragged him by the ear into the nun that taught my classroom, and his nun was crying, and she just threw him into the classroom and said, I can't take him anymore, sister, you have to, this Goldthwait boy. I don't. And I said, whoa, I have to get to know this boy who can make a grown nun cry. It was really bizarre, and so him and I... He was the only other kid that had an interest in that left field kind of, you know, stand-up and sketch comedy. And when SCTV came on the air, it totally blew our minds. And we went to see Andy Kaufman perform in Syracuse when we were... And, you know, it was cool to have another person who was into that stuff so you knew that you weren't crazy. Because, again, now, you know, a kid can get on the internet and just, you know, immediately be in touch with, you know, how many hundreds of like-minded square pegs. But, you know,
it wasn't that way back in the 70s. We had to find other nerds to talk to. ourselves.
There's one really funny memory I have. You know, Bob was the quintessential fat kid that was the class clown, and I was the quintessential shy, skinny kid who didn't have the guts to be class clown, but considered himself the class clown's head writer. You know, I mean, hey, try this during math class, Bob. It'll work for you. You know, that's a good sound. Try that one. But, you know, I have a great memory of us in gym class, and they were picking teams for basketball. And, of course, Bob and I were both just hopeless at sports and, you know, funny as a defense mechanism, that old chestnut. And it came down, they were picking teams, and everyone got picked except Bob and myself and this little girl who had a hook for a hand. And Bob and I just look at each other, and the captain of the other team says, "I'll take Susie." The girl with the hook for the hand walked over to play hoops. And Bob and I just looked at each other and just started laughing. You know, these like, you know, fourth graders just laughing our heads off at how stupid and hopeless we were. Even now, I can't explain how perfect that moment was, where it's just you and your other nerdy friend and the girl with the hook, and the girl with the hook goes off to play basketball, and they're going, "Yeah, Tom and Bob, it doesn't really matter what team they're on. They're just there to make us laugh anyway."
Do you remember the first voices that you started doing that made you realize that you could do it?
You know, like I said, I was kind of shy up until junior high school, and it wasn't until then that I started to kind of step out and think that maybe, you know, maybe I could be funny in front of more people than my handful of selected, trusted friends. So, you know, I wasn't really, you know, I wasn't really waka waka kooky guy in class. I had this secret desire to be, which makes the world of cartoon voiceover perfect for me, because, you know, if you're simultaneously a little bit shy and also an annoying, irritating show-off at the same time, it's the perfect gig.
Do you have a favorite theme song from all the cartoon shows?
Oh, man, I love Top Cat. I thought that Top Cat, the irresistible leader of the gang, you know, that was just such a cool, snappy, rat-packy. and, you know, when I was thinking about it, I realized that all those Hanna-Barbera cartoon characters that I grew up with as a kid were basically ne'er-do-well con men. You know, Top Cat lived in an alley, and him and his buddies were always stealing from garbage cans and hiding from the cops. You know, it's like our market research shows us that children enjoy grifters. Let's make a cartoon series about them. It's like, you know, Yogi Bear is always stealing picnic baskets. It's like, you know, they were all con men and crooks. They had this Sergeant Bilko whiff of illegality about them that I was responding to, and for some reason.
My guest is Tom Kenny, the voice of SpongeBob. The SpongeBob SquarePants movie opens on Friday. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Tom Kenny, the voice of SpongeBob in the new SpongeBob SquarePants movie and in the SpongeBob TV series, which is shown on Nickelodeon. Now, you did a lot of stand-up comedy, too. And what was your stand-up act like?
You know, I wish I remembered it. It was, I guess, very kinetic, pop culture oriented. Also, a lot of stories about just people I had met or seen, or people in my family, or, you know, it sort of was a good stepping off point for the sketch comedy stuff, like Mr. Show with Bob and David on HBO that I later did. You know, just very broad strokes, very high energy, kinetic. I would change it a lot, which, you know, club owners occasionally did not appreciate.
"Hey, your act is different than it was the first show. You got to do the same thing you did the first show."
You know, well, I get bored. I don't want to do it. What's the point if you can't throw some stuff against the wall, and if it doesn't stick, well, those are the breaks. I don't tell you how many cases of Heineken to order. Get off my case.
When I was growing up, all the comics, like so many of the comics, did impressions, and they did impressions of people who they must have grown up with, you know, like James Cagney and Al Jolson, and then
right.
You know, contemporary politicians like JFK and Nixon were thrown
Vaughn
in there.
Meter.
Ed Sullivan. Yeah, right. Everybody had to do Ed Sullivan.
Yeah.
Did you grow up with any of that? And did you ever do impressions? Impressions just aren't what they used to be. Very few people do impressions in their act anymore.
Yeah, and especially, you know, I was doing stand-up comedy you know, I started in 83 or so as a rank open micer. And to us, I don't know, maybe we were like snot-nosed little wise guys, but to us, people like me and Bobcat, like, the impression guys were, there was just something kind of square about it. There was just something kind of corny, like, hey, here's, you know, what if Jack Nicholson was on Star Trek? You know, it was just some sort of who cares, you know? Who cares? So impressions were really not of much interest to me, and maybe because I'm not very good at them myself, maybe it's just sour grapes, because there are voiceover guys that I work with every day that are just have the most incredible ears and incredible radar for doing these uncanny impressions, not just of huge celebrities, but celebrities that you would think you couldn't do an impression of. Like, you know, my friend Billy West, who's like a monster cartoon voice guy. He was Ren and Stimpy and a bazillion other characters, including Popeye currently. But he, he'll do like a dead-on Charlie Sheen. And you go, wow, I didn't know there was enough to Charlie Sheen to do an impression of. Wow, that's really cool. And I never had that skill. My strength was always creating characters out of whole cloth and looking at a drawing or a picture and kind of figuring out what these things might sound like. By the same token, though, a lot of my cartoon voices that I've actually been hired to do have been the result of my highly unsuccessful and lame attempts at impressions.
Like who?
I'll do an impression that's so terrible that it sounds like an original voice. You know, people go, wow, we haven't heard that before. That's very good. And I'll go, well, I was trying to do, this person or that person. But, or sometimes they're amalgams, like the series The Powerpuff Girls, you know, has this ineffectual mayor of the town. Welcome to Townsville, ladies and gentlemen. That's sort of an amalgam of my bad impressions of Frank Morgan, the Wizard of Oz, and Joe Flynn, the guy from McHale's Navy. I'm going to toss you in the brig for this, McHale. Who is the woman? Ruth Gordon, you know, in her later years in those awful movies with Clint Eastwood and an orangutan. Get that monkey out of my Oreos, you know. So it's like there's three horrible, weak attempts at impressions that actually turned into an employment opportunity for me.
How did you break into voice work?
You know, fortuitously, I was doing stand-up one night at the now-defunct Improv in Santa Monica, and there was a person from Nickelodeon and also a person from what was then Hanna-Barbera in the audience, and they both approached me the same night and said it was a showcase, and they said, geez, have you ever thought about doing animated voices for cartoons? And I said, maybe every day of my life, perhaps. Where do I sign? And that was great. I really felt like, you know, once I did the first couple of them, the first one or two were extremely terrifying. And then I felt like I had just found this suit that fit me so well. It was like, wow, this is what I was looking for. You know, this feels even much better and righter to me than stand-up does. It was a blast.
What is the most devious thing you have ever done with your voice?
Oh, boy. That is very weird. I have to say, occasionally, parents who are maybe a little pushy will foist their kid on you and just say, this is Mr. Kenny. He does SpongeBob. Do SpongeBob. Do SpongeBob for Timmy, Mr. Kenny. Do SpongeBob. Do SpongeBob. Do SpongeBob. And then you do the voice and the kid just, you know, they're 2 years old, so they don't understand why this man with 3-day stubble is yammering SpongeBob in their face. It's terrifying for them. So that's kind of unwittingly evil on my part, but I sort of get hornswoggled into it, but I just know that kid is going to be on a psychiatrist's couch somewhere down the line. So tell me again when the sponge man yelled in your face. And that made you cry? But it's weird. And then there's another school of kid who finds out what you do and just comes up with this sense of demanding entitlement and starts poking you and going, talk SpongeBob, talk SpongeBob, talk SpongeBob. it's weird. And then you just say, all right, I'll talk SpongeBob. Why don't you go to your parents and ask them to teach you some manners?
Have you ever used a voice on the telephone or in real life to get somebody to do something that you wanted them to do, but you didn't want them to know that it was you who was behind it. You know what
Ooh,
I mean?
That is a great question, and boy, I've never been asked that. There was a time when I was first trying to get stand-up comedy bookings and trying to book gigs, where I posed as my own agent. I invented, because I was so bad at tooting my own horn and pushing myself, which I was just awful at. But as this guy, I was able to go on and say, hey, this is Tim Golden, and I'm representing a kid who, this kid is, he's dynamite. This kid does voices, he does characters, he's very funny. He's headlining all the clubs and colleges here in the Bay Area. He's wonderful. And, he's done, I make up TV shows. He's done, he's won, I make up awards that he has won the Golden Banana Peel Award for college comedy 2 years in a row. And, you've seen him on Comedy Wagon, a very funny stand-up show that's on with a brick wall and a microphone. And, it was very freeing to be able to be somebody else while you're selling this product.
Did it work?
Believe it or not, yes. It actually, I actually did manage to book a fair amount of gigs that way. And, it was the 80s. There was this huge comedy boom going on where all you had to do to make a living as a stand-up comedian was not be terrible. All you had to do was avoid sheer awfulness, and you could make a living. So it's like, wow, I don't want to set the bar too high, but I think I can be slightly better than awful. I think I can make a living at this.
Do you ever get recognized by your voice, since you don't really use your real voice in your work?
No, actually, this is a character that I'm doing right now. This is this is really hard for me to do right now. No, my real voice is kind of just uninteresting and vanilla and, nasal, Syracuse accent. And, if I wasn't able to twist it into various shapes, I'd be working in a store. Like, I see guys like James Earl Jones, and they've got the voice. They've got that voice, and it's what they do. And it's a gold mine. It's a, if I say Darth Vader's lines, it doesn't have the same cachet. Hey, I find your lack of faith disturbing. Okay, I must have those plans. But, like the guy that does the trailers, in a world where a man's voice goes down at the end of every sentence, it's like, wow, that guy really talks like that. I've run into that guy. That really is his voice. And he really does do the thing where he goes down then. Like in promos, you listen to promos and you realize that it's all about the word then. On a very special CSI Toledo, then, on Buffy. Then, on a very special Pretty People in Their 20s, cellulite is discovered on Sarah.
Have you really met that guy?
I have, yeah, man.
He gets a lot of work.
He's the guy. I mean, it's him. You walk around, you go, wow. Yes, I'm ready for my car now. It's like, I love it. I can make fun of that, but I can't really do it.
Well, you just
did it? And you have to be able to reference the word masterpiece in illimitable ways, it's been called a small masterpiece. Critics are calling it some kind of a masterpiece. It's being hailed as a masterpiece. It's like, wow, if everything's a masterpiece, that makes everything sort of generic. If it's all a masterpiece, it's all.
Well, Tom Kenny, it's just been great talking with you. Thank you so much.
And thank you very much, Terry.
What voice was that?
That was my Mr. Haney hillbilly voice from Green Acres. I don't know. No, I think that was I Did Interviews All Day Today voice. That's Flem. That's Mr. Flem, my new character that I'm working on.
Tom Kenny does the voice of SpongeBob SquarePants. The SpongeBob SquarePants movie opens on Friday. The SpongeBob TV series is shown on Nickelodeon.